Hey, will regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is fantastic to have you with us on the program today. Also on the program here in just a matter of moments, you're going to hear from Patrick Morse. He is a resident of Lewis County, New York, owns a gun store there in Lewis County, New York, No 4 Tactical. And he was on hand last night as local lawmakers there in Lewis County heard from a number of folks who were expressing their support for a Second Amendment sanctuary ordinance, not a resolution, but an ordinance there in Lewis County. If this passes, Lewis County becomes the first Second Amendment sanctuary in the state of New York. But to hear Patrick Morse say it, sounds like Lewis County might have some company here before long as well. Take a look and a listen to our interview with Patrick Morse there in Lewis County, New York. Patrick, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. I appreciate your time this morning.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell me about the meeting last night in Lewis County. It sounded like there was incredible turnout.
There was incredible turnout. You got to remember, we're a very small county. We have about 27,000 people. And getting people politically motivated is always a challenge, but this seemed to really resonate with the people. Last night, we went to the county board of legislators. And you got to remember, most of these meetings got five people showing up to them. We went there. 324 people went through the metal detectors. The security counted them for me. The room could only hold 100. They were backed up out in the hall, down the stairs, filled another hall, backed up to security, and some of them couldn't even get in because they were lined up out in the sidewalk. And it was just phenomenal.
I got to tell you, I mean, that scene sounds a lot like the ones that I saw in Virginia. I've been to about 10 Second Amendment sanctuary meetings. And again, you know, you talk about the hundreds of folks showing up, the incredible turnout. I know that several thousand individuals have signed a petition there in Lewis County urging the local lawmakers there to adopt this ordinance. I know what prompted this movement in Virginia. It was the Democratic takeover of the legislature and the anti-gun bills that started getting filed. What has prompted this in Lewis County and some of the other upstate counties in New York that we're seeing, you know, similar things take place?
Well, I got to back up to about 2013. The governor passed the New York State Act, and there was great opposition to it at the time. But at that time, the sanctuary status hadn't been invented yet by the liberals. So we went through and got 52 of 62 counties to send resolutions in opposition to the SAFE Act. So basically, at the end of the day, it was a piece of paper, and the governor ignored it. So now fast forward to 2019 and 20, you know, there are certain sanctuary cities for another issue, which the liberals came up with that idea, we didn't. And then it sounds like in Virginia, they sent it off for Second Amendment, and so we thought, heck, we'll reboot. We'll now try to do sanctuary status, i.e. true ordinances, such that it's not just a statement.
Yeah, and that's important to know, because a lot of what was passed in Virginia were resolutions. They were sort of exactly what you just described those counties doing after the SAFE Act in 2013. But we're talking about an actual ordinance there in Lewis County that's being considered. What does this ordinance say, Patrick?
The ordinance will forbid the county from spending any resources and forbid all county employees, everything from sheriff's deputies to district attorneys, from enforcing any New York State gun law.
Any New York State gun law?
Yep. We want to be under federal jurisdiction. We will follow the federal laws because there's plenty of those to go around. And enough is enough. The laws that they are passing have no bipartisan support. We're a very peaceful area, and these gun laws are not needed. Now, this will not affect state resources, so a state trooper could still arrest you,
mm-hmm.
but a sheriff's deputy will not.
Right. You're saying that, yeah, that this would apply only to those county officials and county employees. And from what I understand, the sheriff is on board with this?
Very much so. He's a constitutionalist. In New York, you swear several oaths of office, one to the United States Constitution, one to the New York Constitution. And then if you're in law enforcement, you also swear an oath to uphold the laws of the state. The problem is you swear into three different things, and what do you do when they're in conflict with each other? Mm-hmm. The sheriff says you always got to go with the most supreme law, and that's the Constitution.
You know, I've seen some other sheriffs say, listen, you know, I'd love to be able to get on board, but Governor Cuomo has the power to remove sheriffs for not enforcing the law. And if we don't enforce these laws, then, you know, we could just get booted out of office. What do you say to that?
Back in the 1700s, during colonial times, there were some people that became loyalists and they fought for the crown. Other people became patriots and fought for independence. And I'm not professing that we'll do war or anything, but it's time to take a side. And some sheriffs seem like they're loyalists to me.
Talking again with Patrick Morse, who runs No 4 Tactical up there in Lewis County. So, Patrick, you know, I know that no vote was taken last night. I have seen some comments from local lawmakers there saying, well, you know, because of the turnout, because of the number of citizens who signed this petition, we're going to do something. But how would you describe the reaction from the local board of legislators there in Lewis County to what y'all are asking for?
Well, to my knowledge, three of the legislators actually signed our petition. So it's really good. I have had some off-the-record conversations with some legislators afterwards, and we think we have enough votes to get it passed. They are going to send it to committee for a look-see. And we told them they can change some writing to make it more palatable as long as they don't water it down. We do not want a statement sent to the governor. We want a law.
So what's next? You said this is going to be in committee. Is that going to be a public hearing? What should gun owners in Lewis County be paying attention to right now?
Committee hearings, unless they're with personnel, are always open to the public. I've been told some of us will be invited to actually do a back and forth, and we're very much willing to do that. And what was repeatedly to the legislators was, we know the governor is going to fight us on this. The governor is going to make threats. First guy through the door always gets a bloody nose. Believe me, there's going to be a lot of other counties coming on board, and what's he going to do? Get rid of all the sheriffs? I mean, people are going to want to get rid of the governor if he starts doing that. We're just not going to listen to him.
I think there is safety in numbers. I think you're right about that. And you know, we've seen, I think, from Governor Cuomo, he's far more interested in putting laws on the books and holding press conferences than he is in actually enforcing the laws. I mean, you look at some of the problems with the SAFE Act, you know, the governor himself decided, all right, we're not going to do the ammunition background checks that are required under the law. Okay, fine, the 7-round magazine limit. Okay, you can have your 10-round magazines. Rather than, you know, again, strictly enforce this law and see those political problems ensue, the governor's taken the easy way out, I think, in a lot of these cases. So I agree with you. I suspect that if you have, you know, a dozen, two dozen, three dozen counties that sign similar measures where the county sheriffs say, listen, I'm not going to enforce any of these gun laws. I have a really hard time seeing Governor Cuomo remove each and every one of those sheriffs from their position. I just don't see that happening.
I don't see it happening either.
Well,
and we are very much behind our sheriff, and there's going to be hell to pay if he pulls a political stunt like that.
Well, listen, good luck to you there in Lewis County and all of the other counties. Do you have any idea how many other counties right now are considering this in New York State?
Two other counties approached us last night wanting to talk to us how we organized in such a short period of time. There are two neighboring counties, so I'm sure it's going to be popping up everywhere. Like I told the legislators, you're going to blink and you're going to see these everywhere. So don't cower to it.
Well, that's certainly what we saw in Virginia. I hope that your movement up there in New York State is just as successful. And Patrick, thank you so much, sir, for spending some time with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. So in the interest of fairness, let's give you a little sampling of some of the opponents who were on hand in Lewis County last night. This is from North Country Public Radio in upstate New York. Christine Mooney from Glenfield argued that state gun laws don't restrict reasonable firearm ownership, saying, quote, I am married to an avid hunter. We own many guns. My husband has never complained about not being able to purchase or acquire any weapon for his sporting events. Then there was Judy Bentley, who argued that reducing the number of firearms would translate into less gun violence and fewer school shootings. Quote, make sure that we're protecting the children, number one. All right, so let's talk about that for a minute. First of all, we know that the number of accidents involving firearms has dropped dramatically in recent years, right? We also know that gun deaths involving those under the age of 18 have been increasing over the last couple of years, at least according to one study that I have recently looked at. But this study, which was conducted by a Boston University researcher, makes the case that the broad gun control policies that people like Judy Bentley support are ineffective at actually reducing those deaths, that that these deaths are increasing even as states like New York put more gun laws on the books. And the reason why, according to this researcher, is because, look, the vast majority of people, and this makes sense, the vast majority of people who own firearms will never commit a crime with them. They just won't. We have 100 million Americans who are legal gun owners in this country right now, and 99.9% of them are never going to be a problem. Violent crime and gun-related deaths are driven by individuals who, A, illegally possess firearms, B, are known to law enforcement and the community in which they live, and C, are responsible for a disproportionate amount of violent crime. Both, and are perpetrators, I'll give you a fourth one too, are both more likely to be a perpetrator and a victim of violent crime. So if you really want to reduce those deaths, you don't pass universal background check laws. You don't pass a gun ban. You don't pass laws that are aimed at the 99.9% of gun owners who will never pose a problem. You target the 0.1% of individuals who own firearms in this country, again, most of them illegally, who are causing problems, who are causing chaos, who are causing heartbreak in their communities, who are making it unsafe for kids to play outside or making it unsafe for kids to go to school. And again, in the vast majority of cases, we know who these individuals are. The police know who they are. The people who live in these neighborhoods know who these bad actors are. And we also know that there are strategies and tactics that can be adopted that don't require, frankly, any new laws being put on the books that can dramatically impact the ability of those individuals to cause such mayhem on the streets where they live. Now, again, gun control advocates don't like these proposals because they don't involve taking guns away from legal gun owners, which brings us to what Ms. Bentley said, right? Reducing the number of firearms, she says, would translate into less gun violence. Well, we have actually seen the opposite. Over the past 10 years or so, we've seen really, I mean, I believe record high levels of gun sales in this country, right? We now have around 400 million privately owned firearms in this country. And what has happened? Violent crime has continued to decrease in the United States. We are at or near historic lows in terms of our violent crime rate, in terms of our homicide rate, and things are moving in the right direction, even as more Americans possess more privately owned firearms. So no, more guns does not equal more crime, Ms. Bentley. In fact, we've seen the opposite to be the case, more guns and less crime. Again, it makes sense because the vast, vast majority of gun owners are not the problem. So it doesn't matter how many guns they own, doesn't matter how many legal law-abiding gun owners there are. If you're focusing on reducing the number of legally owned firearms or reducing the number of legal gun owners in order to reduce violent crime, I mean, again, not only are you infringing on a constitutional right, but you're barking up the wrong tree. So anyway, just a quick look at those who were in opposition to this proposal there in Lewis County last night. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, as well as our recidivist report. We'll start there. Exactly what I'm talking about. Exactly what I am talking about. All right, here's the headline. Wilmington, Delaware. Wilmington police arrest man in fatal shooting. Suspect was recently paroled and out on bond. Shocker. I know. This from Port City Daily, reporting that Dante Jamar Robinson, age 45, arrested for the murder of a 38-year-old man, recently paroled. This was Tuesday night, around 11:30. And according to Port City Daily, he was recently released from parole, currently out on bond for a November arrest. Rollinson taking into custody near the scene of the shooting, where he was charged with first-degree murder as well as possession of a firearm by a felon, now being held in the new Hanover County Jail without bond. They report that he has a history of felony convictions, including armed robbery, possession, and parole probation violations. Most recently, he spent 3 years in prison for possession of Schedule I drugs as well as possession of a firearm by a felon. 3 years. He was released in July of 2018. He got a parole violation in March of 2019. He was reincarcerated and was re-released in June of 2019. He was arrested again on November 7, 2019 on several charges, including felony possession of a firearm by a felon and resisting arrest. He currently has a March 5th court date for that arrest. According to Port City Daily, Rollinson was released on bond prior to his arrest this week. The new Hanover County court system has not yet confirmed what his bond and release conditions are. Okay, so again, guy charged now with murder, who has been in recent years, what was that, 3 years in prison, released in July of 2000. So since in the last five years, Rollinson has been arrested three different times for being a felon in possession of a firearm. Now, again, in one case, he got 3 years. In one case, he bonded out and was out on the streets to allegedly commit this murder and once again be arrested for a felon in possession charge. Rather than, a little slap on the wrist for being a felon in possession, maybe there should actually be some serious consequences for that. And in fact, there are. I mean, if this case had been referred to federal court, for instance, Rollinson would have been looking at 10 years in a federal prison, having to serve 85% of that sentence before he would have been eligible for early release. Instead, this case went through the state court system. He got a much lighter sentence. And even after he violated the terms of his probation, he got a couple more months behind bars. That was it. And so he was out on the streets again, allegedly able to commit this murder. On to our armed citizen story of the day from NBC in Charlotte, North Carolina, WCNC, where a Good Samaritan and an armed citizen came to the aid of a neighbor in Ballantyne after an attempted carjacking right there in that suburban neighborhood. Pretty crazy. Officers responded to a reported shooting around 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday morning. Officers got to the home. They found a 17-year-old who had been shot. Officers learned during their investigation that the teen had approached a woman and then tried to steal her car at gunpoint. Police said the suspect took the woman's keys and then began to steal the car when the woman's husband came outside and began wrestling with the carjacker. Multiple neighbors came running to help, including a Good Samaritan with a firearm, who ordered the suspect to drop his gun. When he refused to drop the gun, the neighbor shot the suspect, held him to the ground until police arrived. How about that? The suspect taken to a Charlotte hospital for treatment. Neighbor who lives across the street from the victim said that the victim's wife had screamed for help. Neighbors came running to the scene, surrounded the carjacker so he couldn't get away. A woman said she was screaming, "My husband's been shot. I need help. I need help." I was trying to see what she was screaming about, and I saw the car back up and then hit the side of the house, and she was screaming, "My husband's been shot." Now, during this investigation, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department determined that this suspect was linked to a high-speed chase in Ballantyne several hours earlier, around 4:30 in the morning, 2 hours before this incident occurred. Officers had responded to a reported shooting. Victim told police that two suspects were breaking into his wife's vehicle when they pulled a gun, drove away in a white Toyota Camry, and then fired multiple shots. A woman said, "I was very scared. I just can't believe, because I picture this area like a Hallmark movie. It's so perfect." About 20 minutes after that, so just before 5 o'clock in the morning, officers called to an armed robbery in the area. A victim told police that a white Toyota Camry, apparently the one that had just been stolen, pulled behind his vehicle. Suspect wearing a mask pointed a gun at him. That victim was also armed, by the way. another armed citizen, and he fired at the suspect, who then ran away from the scene. How? Now, listen, I'm not a criminal. I don't really have that criminal mindset, but I do just have to wonder. Sorry, I just knocked something over here. How stupid do you have to be? You steal a car. You try to rob somebody. That somebody is an armed citizen. They defend themselves. And then you decide, I'm going to try to rob somebody again. So, again, at last report, the 17-year-old suspect, who is a convicted felon already, according to WCNC, taken to the hospital with minor injuries. The car he was driving reported stolen on January 29th. So there you go. Recidivist report and an armed citizen story all in one. All right, finally, our good deed of the day, Cleveland, Ohio, where a Vietnam veteran helped a police officer catch a suspect. That is a still frame from the body camera worn by the officer as he was running through these streets of downtown Cleveland. If you're wondering why it's a little blurry there. Fox 6 reporting that the incident happened back in December. John Gordy is the Vietnam veteran in question. He said officers needed help. He said, I helped him, helped the police officer because they were in need. Police had a guy named Dylan Stump in a patrol car after he was arrested on a warrant tied to a burglary ring. Police say that Stump broke the door handle and then escaped from the back seat. The officer chased after him, captured on public square. As officers tried to adjust his handcuffs, Stump started resisting officers. John Gordy says after that, it was like, boom. It was more of a tussle, more of a struggle. That's when the veteran stepped in to help officers gain control of the suspect. Gordy ended up injuring his hand while doing so, but he said that won't stop him if there is ever a next time. He said that he knows what he did was appreciated. After Gordy helped subdue the suspect, officer shook hands with John Gordy and said, take care, brother. Another handshake here from one veteran to another. Stump indicted, by the way, with six other people on an eight-month burglary spree. Police say they are going to a grand jury to tack on more charges based on what happened there in December. But in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, John Gordy there in Cleveland, Ohio, we thank you for your service and we thank you for your very good deed. That is about all the time that we have for you here on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Hey, I do want to remind you, Friday we're going to do an all-email edition of the show, but I'm actually going to tape this Thursday afternoon. So get your emails in today or tomorrow morning, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. I have a doctor's appointment with my wife on Friday morning. We get the results of her latest CT scan and her cancer fight. So fingers crossed and prayers up if you are the praying kind. Certainly would appreciate it, but I will make sure that we have fresh content for you on Friday. And we'll be back tomorrow as well with a brand new edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. You can be my VIP member of BearingArms.com at BearingArms.com. We certainly appreciate your support. And we'll talk to you soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.